This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
I'm hoping and praying it doesn't happen because I don't think that this is devolution. I know devolution refers mostly to an elected mayor, but that's a logical next step. And I think that this should be about power transferring back to communities at the lowest level. And this isn't. This is about power being concentrated in the hands of an incredibly small number of people. And I don't think that's democracy.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the 101st edition of the Kent Politics Podcast. Not quite room 101, but we're hosting a bit of a first this week in our new format with not one, not two, but three guests, all from the left of Kent politics. I'm Simon Finlay, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council, and joining me is Dan Essen, who covers the 12 borough and district authorities here in Kent.
Hello, Simon.
One thing that I don't know whether you have heard this or not, and perhaps these are just rumours that are emanating out of County Hall, where I spend quite a lot of time, is about the local government reorganisation. And there seems to be an increasing feeling amongst most of the parties I speak to there that it's not going to happen.
And maybe I've got my ear to the ground in the wrong places, but I have to say, I've not heard any rumours that it might not happen. So where are you hearing it?
Well, we've got three guys coming in, and I think they're all got their reservations about the timing. Even if they don't think necessarily that it's not going to happen, there seems to be a feeling amongst most of the political parties in Kent, and not least Lyndon Kemp-Caron, who's the leader of Reform UK, who just think that the whole thing is going to be massively too expensive. It's going to be very, very complicated, the whole disaggregation of services, you know, things like, you know, social services and education, whatever. You have to dismantle the whole thing and then sort of like regionalise them and then have a body sort of sitting above it, sort of watching over it. It just seems, and this will all have to be done notionally before 2028, when possibly the shadow elections coming up in, I think it's 2027. So we've got just a little over a year to actually make this whole thing work. And yet the government minister, the new minister in charge, Steve Reid, and the local government minister, Alison McGovern, haven't yet come back with a decision of the one of the five options that Kent has put forward. So, and the time frame simply isn't conducive. When it was brought in by Angela Rayner and Jim McMahon, they were the architects of it. And there just seems to be a feeling that the new incumbents are just not that enthusiastic.
I mean, my immediate thought would be that everyone knew it was going to be fiendishly complicated when it started. Even Jim McMahon, who I think himself used to be the former leader of Oldham councils, he knows the local government is, yeah, bureaucracy is a mess. And he will have known that it would be quite a Herculean task to disentangle them and to create new authorities out of it. The fact that there's a new minister, you wouldn't usually assume that a project this big, long-term and quite important for the sort of stated aims of the national government. They think it, for example, helped hit their housing targets, simplify the planning system and so on. You wouldn't think they would drop this kind of policy just because basically they've got a minister who's not enthusiastic about it. Is there something specific that's happened recently which you think has made people
fearless? Well, there was a response by McGovern to a question by James Cleverly. I haven't got it in front of me, but it just seemed as if it was just, they're slightly kind of watering it down a little bit. Hmm. And that was an interpretation you could have taken from it. But then if you look at other parliamentary answers to questions by people like James Cleverly, you know, it seems to be on track. And I take your point that once you're embarked on this particular journey, but we have a government that has been remarkable only for the amount of U-turns that it's done. And what's the difference? But, you know, when the farmers thing, which was a big thing in Kent, massive reaction against it. They dug their heels and said, we're not going to change it. And obviously then at some point, someone's turned around and said, this isn't going to work. And there's a lot of constituencies that are currently held by Labour MPs and they're probably going to lose their seats. So is that one of the reasons for it? Or did they just think, oh, this isn't actually going to work?
Do you reckon it's likely? Do you think it's a chance that the government will just give up on LGR, basically? Because the local councils in Kent, they've spent the better part of the last year spending untold amounts of officer time and money coming up with these extremely complicated visions for what Kent should look like post-reorganisation. It's coloured everything they've done for like a year. Like, maybe it's not something that would lead to a massive, you know, ballot box insurrection on its own, but this is the kind of thing that, you know, local councillors are the foot soldiers of local parties. The local government sector is by necessity very plugged into national politics. If they were to reverse this and say, sorry, all that work you've done over the past year planning is basically a waste of time, surely it would be it'd be pretty outrageous, and councils up and down the land of pretty much every party would be fuming, and I think they'd make it quite clear to the government. Do you really think there's any chance they would just drop it wholesale?
I don't know. There's a straight answer to that. But you could see that Labour might, by delaying larger counties like Kent, with, you know, a near 2 million population, they might just sort of let the reform administration stay in as long as possible, just to see whether it ends up failing on its own.
You said obviously the goal would be for all the services and for everything to be planned out by 2028, by the time new councils come in, or if possible before the shadow authorities in 2027. And I think I take your point, that does seem extraordinarily optimistic. When they broke up Northamptonshire County Council from a couple of years ago, I think it's 2020, 2021, from a system like we have, but with less councils, a two-tier system, to two unitary authorities. They were in court battling for about 3 or 4 years in the High Court just over who was responsible for which part of the predecessor county council authority's debt. That wasn't even really distributing services or anything. So these kind of things can end up extremely sort of drawn out legal processes. So I see what you mean by it would be, I'd be very surprised if anything that complicated happened that quickly in British local government.
Unless they've got some sort of a magic formula for sorting out historical debt. I mean, you've got places like... I think Dartford's actually quite rich, for example, so quite a lot of money.
Yeah, I think Sevenoaks Council runs a surplus as well.
Yeah, and you've got other authorities which have got quite a lot of debt. Most councils have debt because they can borrow at much cheaper rates, so it's not really a case of... But what happens to debt when you have something like this? You don't want to lumber one geographical region with a whole pile of debt that it can't really accommodate, so do you have to share it? Nobody knows the answer to these questions, because these are the specifics that the government has never actually... come and told us. They haven't sort of said, it's almost like they don't know what the detail is.
And stuff about like the distribution of property, like some councils throughout Kent at the moment are already, so town and parish councils, which are thought to be, that they'll be much more important after the reorganisation for sort of some low level services. Some town and parish councils are already asking district councils to transfer some property to them in advance of the reorganisation. It's like Faversham Town Council in recent months has attempted to take over the ownership of central car park in Faversham, which obviously is a huge, like, parking is a massive source of council income, makes loads of money. Swellborough Council was never going to give it to them. I think they gave them the public toilets or something as like a kind of consolation prize. But things like this, like, they seem quite boring, but like that's pretty much the meat of what local government reorganisation is going to involve. And you know, who owns the car park is actually the difference between an authority having a budget surplus of 5 million or running a deficit. And I think you're right that the government hasn't really set out any firm agenda for how to distribute these things. You know, if five towns become part of one big unitary authority, what happens to the low-level services in those towns? And that's gonna cause quite a lot of trouble, even if reorganisation does go ahead. But I'm still not convinced. Is the complexity of that kind of thing enough to convince the government to take the massive political fallout of just cancelling this transformative programme? I'm not sure.
We've got, I suppose, a couple of big milestones coming up this year. I mean, the May elections. But before that, on February the 26th, there's the... Gorton and Denton by-election, which is a long way from here, but actually has quite a strong Kent connection. You know the candidate that Reform's putting up, Matthew Goodwin, don't you?
I do indeed, yeah. He's pretty famous, I guess, insofar as you can have celebrity academics in this country. He is one, though he's not really an academic anymore. He was a politics lecturer at the University of Kent when I was a student there. I did politics. And he taught the Introduction to British Politics class, which is a compulsory class for all first years. And he was my lecturer. I didn't know him on a personal level. He wasn't my seminar leader, so I can't claim any unique insight into his mind or his personal life. But I followed his political career with some interest, because this is part of why he's generated so much interest. There's been lots of profiles of him in places like The New Statesman and Prospects and The New European or whatever. And he was basically the sort of foremost academic expert, at least public-facing academic expert, on the politics of right-wing populism in the 2010s. He was on the BBC quite frequently. He was on questions like, I think he did Moral Maze. He definitely did the Big Questions. He was then, and essentially positioned himself and was seen as the kind of liberal centre-left, centre-right emissary to and whisperer for radical movements like UKIP and the EDL and the BNP. His first book was about the BNP. It was called New British Fascism. And he essentially, over the course of the past maybe 6 years or so, what a lot of people say is that he's quote unquote gone native. He went from being a student of and an academic expert on the politics of right-wing populism to being an actual right-wing populist. He eventually wasn't doing much of his teaching work at the Uni of Kent. In my last year in 2021, I did his radical right politics module, which he didn't teach, even though he designed it. He became more of a sort of media celebrity. He was going on GB News a lot. Now he's a host on GB News. And eventually he joined Reform UK, and they announced him as their candidate in Gorton and Denton only a week ago, or a few days ago rather, which obviously quite surprised me. I mean, I knew he was involved with the party, but I didn't think he would end up being a candidate so quickly. And the fact they've put up such a high profile candidate suggests to me that they think they probably have quite a good chance of winning.
Well, I had a little look at the dynamics of it. The Labour Party seem to think that they can turn this into a straight Green Party reform battle. The Green Party, on the other hand, probably see it as a three-way fight or even a two-way fight, and Reform sees it as it will almost certainly be battling not the Labour Party, but the Green Party.
Yeah, and I think as of recording this, we don't know who the Labour Party candidate is yet. But obviously this was meant to be the seat where Andy Burnham, Mayor of Greater Manchester, applied for permission to Labour's National Executive to run as a candidate for this seat, and they refused him because basically the received wisdom was that Andy Burnham would win this seat, which I don't think is controversial. He definitely would. And then from there, he would be in a position in Parliament to basically lead a movement against Keir Starmer and depose Keir Starmer as PM. So now his route to Parliament is completely uncertain, and the Labour Party is going to have to pick another candidate who is unlikely to enjoy what I think I've seen described as the North Korean levels of support that Andy Burnham gets. He won, I think in the most recent mayoral election, he won every single ward in Greater Manchester with a clean majority.
Yeah. So meanwhile, we've got Angela Rayner allegedly on manoeuvres.
Yeah, and Burnham not being in Parliament obviously means that he still has his position as the prince across the water, but those who are the only people who can be PM and depose Keir Starmer are people who are actually in Parliament. So I guess the ball falls back into the court of people like Angela Rayner, who I've seen it reported in publications, I think The Times and The New Statesman, that Angela Rayner is unclear whether she would want to be the Prime Minister, but apparently she is so strongly opposed to the prospect of Wes Streeting being the Prime Minister that she would run to oppose him. Mm. And those of us who've followed the politics of the Labour Party for long enough know that Wes Streeting has clearly had designs on that post for quite a few years now. So if there was an opportunity, I think
we should also just point out, I guess, for sake of clarity, the reasons that Burnham was blocked, official reason, essentially, that it would divert resources away from doing other things, and it would also leave Burnham's job vacant, and therefore Reform would probably win that.
Yeah.
So that was the danger, and those are the reasons for blocking him.
Yeah. But and the prohibitive
I think the reasons you articulated are probably the real reasons.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Joining us this week are three county councillors, all leaders of their respective political groups at County Hall, and all from the left. So welcome Anthony Hook, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Mark Coode, leader of the Green Party group, and Alistair Brady, co-leader of the Labour group. Thank you for all taking the time to come and speak to us today to the Kent Politics podcast. Just turning to you, Anthony, Dan and I were discussing earlier whether local government reorganisation will go ahead as planned or it might be pushed back. I mean, what's your sense of what's going on at the minute? Do you think it's going to happen?
I think it's likely to happen, and I think it's become more likely to happen. The process is a lot more advanced. So around mid-February, it's expected the government will announce proposals for public consultation. Then there'll be a six-week period. It's really important that people have their say. So this will
at this point, the minister will have made a choice or choices or one choice, do you think?
The advice from officers at Kent County Council, which was given to us yesterday, actually, is that they think multiple options will go out and the government won't indicate their preferred option. So there'll still be consultation, multiple options. But I think it's more likely than not now that there will be some form of local government reorganisation. How many councils that turns Kent into is up for grabs. It could still be cancelled, but the government has now put a lot of time and effort into this, and I think that makes it less likely they'll change their mind. So this will see for people in Kent a big change in our local government.
Yeah, my take on this is that the government's bitten off more than it can chew. The number of options coming from Kent are five. From what I gather, the government's not whittling down those options to a smaller number. So this is going to be incredibly confusing for
Mark. You're not convinced it's going to happen, are you?
I'm hoping and praying it doesn't happen because I don't think that this is devolution. I know devolution refers mostly to an elected mayor, but that's a logical next step. And I think that this should be about power transferring back to communities at the lowest level. And this isn't. This is about power being concentrated in the hands of an incredibly small number of people. And I don't think that's democracy.
It's coming. And it's all about delivering for better services for people on the doorstep. And that's the issue. If you look at the models that we've got at the moment, you've got KCC and you've got districts that aren't in the room when they're having conversations about housing and adult social care. If you look at determinants of health, you need to have a roof over your head and a comfortable place to live. But if you don't have housing and adult social care, if you don't have housing and children's services all in the same room having a conversation, it's not working. So this is going to be happening and it's going to be better for Kent residents.
Leaving aside the sort of positive case for or against it, do you not think that obviously local government as it stands, especially in Kent with 14 authorities, is fiendishly complicated? And when, for example, I think it's Northamptonshire County Council was broken up in 2020 into two unitary authorities, they spent something like 3 or 4 years in court just fighting over who was responsible for the debt from the predecessor authority. Whereas under the current plans, all of Kent's local authorities have to divide up between them property and services and probably debt as well. And that all has to be done between 13, 14 authorities by 2027, 2028. Even if you think the reform, if done properly, will deliver better services, do you not think maybe there's a risk the government have bitten off more than they could chew and it could end up being quite messy?
No. I mean, you look at what's happened previously and you can learn from that. You don't make the same mistakes and you get to the end product, but doing it in a better way. You mentioned that service delivery, the districts and county council is messy on how that's delivered. Well, on the doorstep, if you say, who's responsible? Who's accountable for doing X, Y and Z? People don't know. So it's going to be better accountability and better services. And I think if you have a 3 or a 4 unitary, I think a 4 would be better. It keeps the identity of where you live, but there's enough tax and business rates to come in to be able to deliver those services. Then people will see a marked difference over a few years. There'll be teething problems, but over a few years of better service delivery, and that's all it's about.
Quite clear, that's quite a loyalist position. Anthony, can local government reorganisation work?
It can work, and there's pros and cons for it and against it. I mean, one of the detractions will be you will lose your district council, which is the most local thing. So you might say in East Kent have 3 or 4 councils merged into one, and that will be a bit more remote. But on the other hand, you'll have power coming down, because at the moment the county council is very remote from people. The decisions are made in Maidstone. That's quite a long way from Thanet or Folkestone. So there's pros and cons. But we have unitary authorities through a lot of the country, and they are functional in the way that the county council is functional. So it definitely can work. And one of the things that I find really quite weird at the moment, though, is that Kent County Council under reform is spending a lot of money promoting one option, which is a single mega council that sucks up all the power from a local level, which I think people are rightly horrified by, actually. That'd be no local democracy whatsoever. You have a committee in Maidstone deciding housing allocations from Dartford to Dungeness. Absolutely absurd. What I don't understand is why Reform Kent Council is spending lots of money doing almost daily videos on the KCC social media channels promoting that, as if the minister in London right now who's reviewing the 5 proposals is going to be influenced by the KCC social media. And the only effect it does do is just kind of promote the profile of the KCC leader, which is, in my view, is a misuse of public resources.
And residents are starting to laugh at those.
Oh, the comments are extraordinary, aren't they?
Yeah. It's comical. It's turning into a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the criteria busting option, and it stands absolutely no chance of getting through. But there's no reason that these districts and borough councils can't combine. As we've seen this across the country previously.
I mean,
there was talk about having these combined councils in East Kent before. Lots of conversations were had, and that I think that would work, because you'd cut executive pay. because you wouldn't have to have all as many executive officers. And certainly the system could be simplified. But if you had a situation like they have in Northern Ireland, where you have you've got a level of government above the districts by having an assembly, that can work. But unfortunately, that model has been ruled out. But I think there is another way of doing this. But you have to have the NHS closer to social services, adult social services. And that can be done within that kind of model.
It sounds like you're talking about Merrill's strategic authority above unitaries, but I didn't know you were a supporter.
Well, you three guys have all either are or have served as district or borough councillors. And, you know, you could probably tell better than anybody else whether that's going to be a bad thing to lose that tier. I mean, Alistair, what do you think of that then?
If you're a good councillor and you represent the residents of your division, no, because you're there to represent bringing highways, adult social care, children's services, waste disposal aligned with waste collection into a smaller locality with an identity is obviously going to be better than Maidstone making all of those decisions. What needs to step up, and I think it will, because we've got fantastic parishes, and parish councils are another link to the community, and there are areas with town councils. They are links to their community, and I think a way to build the relationships even better than they are is the way forward.
I agree with that. Actually, I think town and parish councils, which are the most local level, are really important. There's about half of Kent isn't parished, is the word, and I think that should change. I mean, in Faversham, where I live, the town council is really important and makes a big difference because it has 14 members, it has a budget of about 700,000, which is collected from a very small precept on the council tax, and it has complete freedom about how to use that. So the thing with both district councils and the county councils is they have a lot of statutory responsibilities, things they have to do, and that accounts for most of the budget. There isn't actually a lot of policy choice. But the town and parish councils, they have complete freedom of action to do anything that they think is in the local interest, or to do nothing if they think that's what local people want. So I am a big fan of town and parish councils, and I think we should have more of them.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan of town council. We're trying to start a town council. We've been through the community governance process.
In Tunbridge.
In Tunbridge, yeah. And I think that's how you empower communities. That's how you build cohesion. I think it is really important that you, whatever successor councils come through, that there is a real connection between the people that we serve and the members. The problem we've got at the moment, if you look at my particular borough, we've got three different planning committees, an element of distrust between the different component parts of the borough. Now, we're going to be looking at a new unitary for West Kent that's going to extend from Swanley in the north and Walderslade and Edenbridge in the west across to Lenham and all the way down to Hawkhurst. And if we're going to have one planning committee for that, then you've got a problem. But the largest problem looming over us is actually democratic control and influence over planning looks like it's going to be heading out the window because of the government's proposed changes. Mm. So officers will make all the decisions. That's not what we're elected for. We were meant to be in there representing our residents to get the best outcomes on their behalf.
I mean, two things to bear in mind there is actually sometimes you get resistance to creating a town or parish council, and that happened in Whitstable a year or two ago. And one of the arguments that people put forward is this campaign against this is you'd have to pay more council tax. I mean, actually, it's very small. I mean, Faversham is about an extra few pounds a month to get that. But actually, if you don't want to pay that, you can always elect a town council that won't collect a precept. And actually, the communications challenge is quite difficult in the sense that in Faversham, people like having the town council. They see the extra events it puts on, the things it organises, and that will be true in Tunbridge too if they get one. And it would be true in Whitstable. But getting people to imagine what could be is actually more challenging than simply the message of you'll have to pay a bit more tax. But it's really important we overcome that and actually get people to envisage how things could be and the value it could add to their lives. Sometimes also where there's resistance is where there's new housing development. Because interestingly, some sometimes the housing developers will discourage their residents from supporting creation of a parish council, because on a lot of developments now, the builders will charge service fees for maintaining common areas, green areas, parking areas, and so on. Actually, they don't want the residents to get together through something like a parish council, because it'll give them a stronger voice about challenging how are you guys using our service fees. But what one Simon mentioned in the introduction about electoral systems, and even at a parish and town council level, I think this is an issue. Because, for instance, in Faversham, my party, the Liberal Democrats, get about 45 to 50% of the vote. We've currently in Faversham got 12 out of 14 seats, which is a lot more than 50%. And I do think there's actually an unfairness that some people vote for other parties and have ended up with no seats. And you see that in the district and boroughs, and even the county council too. Reform have got about three quarters of the seats, but they only got a third of the vote. And that's completely outrageous.
Can I just come in? If you look at this discussion, we're talking about identity and service delivery. But if you look at what Kent County Council are proposing, the one unitary, the super council, was meant to be put forward as a blocker. Now, because that's public knowledge, they have to, and like we've said, every single day, go on camera to try and convince people that it's not a blocker and they think this is the best way. And they're talking about one unitary and three assemblies, but they don't know how those assemblies are going to work, and they're not going to be codified, and they can just scrap them. So I think they're just misleading the general public.
I tell you something, it's completely outrageous on that point. In November, start of the flu vaccine season, it was really important to get people to take up the flu vaccine. And in Kent, there was an underperformance. Not as many people had the flu vaccine as should have. Kent County Council, which is the public health authority, in November, put out more social media content about LGR than it did about flu vaccines. And that is completely outrageous.
Scandal.
So, speaking of County Hall, between your three parties in descending order of size, Liberal Democrats, Greens and Labour, the three of you essentially represent what there is of an organised left in at least county council level politics. Do you feel like, by virtue of facing essentially a new party of the right, which nobody is quite accustomed to opposing anymore, do you feel like the three of your parties essentially now have much more in common than that which divides you?
I would say also, I think Reform are not of the right, but actually of the hard right, into a lot of the views they express. And I think my party is of the centre and the centre left. And I think that's, you know, a distinction between some of the others. But we've got a broad front in which we have a lot of common ground. And even the Conservative group sometimes share that common ground with our really deep concerns about the Reform administration.
As previously, there were 62 Conservative councillors. So we would have to work collaboratively to get things through. So for call-ins, you have to have two people from different parties to be able to call in a bad decision. So we were used to working together. It's just now that there's such incompetence in some areas within Reform and so many bad ideas that it's throws you together because you really want to work to better people's lives in Kent. And we're seeing very bad decisions that are really going to impact people in Kent's lives in the worst possible way. Mm. So we have to work together to stop that from happening. Not to stop the council from doing good things, just to stop them from making so many mistakes.
Mark, what about the Green Party then?
We're a distinct party. We've got a very different outlook to the...
No one's suggesting you've got three distinct parties, but...
Yeah, yeah. But we work collaboratively together because we can see, we understand, just look at the draft budget. We can see the level of damage that Reform are going to inflict on the people of Kent. We can see that in the years running up to LGR, should that happen, that we may never get there. The commissioners may be walking up those red carpeted steps long before that comes along, because
for a photo opportunity.
Yeah, and that's a genuine fear for all of us. So all of us. And all of our colleagues were elected to do the best thing by the people of Kent, and that is what we're there for, and we're advocating on their behalf, because it just feels like damage limitation. You've got an administration which is, by its own admission, as well as the managed decline of highways, it seems to be that's the whole estate, and it's looking like that's going to be the entire council. Moving into a building which is shabby and on its knees it seems to me quite apt.
Between the three of your parties, you have what I think less, if my arithmetic is right, less than a third of the seats in County Hall overall. Surely that doesn't augur well for the future of all three of your parties in in Canterbury, particularly, well, particularly in Canterbury.
Labour and the Cooperative Party got 13% of the vote in Kent. 13%.
But the only two places you got enough to get seats were in the county's only university town. I'd imagine that doesn't enthuse you about the prospects.
Yeah, we were close. We came second in lots of. That's why we got 13%. So it's yes. You don't get any prizes for second. And that's the voting system that we all go towards. But we've got 13% of the vote. That's why we still have a really strong voice, and we're representing Labour supporters in Kent, like we've done, like I've done for the last 5 years, and we'll continue to do that and be a strong voice.
Yeah, I mean, the system is completely broken. The Green Party got more of the popular vote, I think, than the Liberal Democrats, and they've got over double the number of 37%. I think was the figure that Anthony spoke about earlier for reform, and they are in absolute control. So there's a world of difference between what we're seeing now in terms of the unwillingness to work with other parties from reform, and actually what we had before under the Conservatives, where you could have a reasonable debate, the door would be open. It's chalk and cheese.
Disagree well. That's what we did previously with the Conservatives. We were able to disagree in an amicable way. But when you've got the leader of the council who would have an argument in an empty room, it's really quite challenging.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, I mean, the big scrap in British politics is not arguably the tussle for the right. Well, what is up for grabs is the left, and potentially four left-leaning parties, if we include your party, that is, all vying for to take a slice of the pie. Starting with you, Anthony, you know, what will be your approach towards the general election? You've got one seat in Kent, Tunbridge Wells. I don't know, everyone, it's an open secret that you're going to be going for Sevenoaks. So how will you approach that? And is it going to simply be a target in Operation Leapfrog?
I think what we'll do is build on what happened in the last election, which was a lot of people switched to Liberal Democrats, especially from the Conservatives. And that's why we won a lot of seats, not just Tunbridge Wells, but also throughout the home counties, Oxfordshire, Surrey and Sussex, and so on, Essex to an extent in Chelmsford. And I think we'll look to build on that for a start. I think there are a lot of moderate centrist people who previously voted Conservative who are horrified by the rightward lurch they're taking under Kemi Badenoch and will be increasingly attracted to the Liberal Democrats. And I think also there'll be people who maybe have previously voted Labour but will find the Liberal Democrats attractive too. So I think we'll be looking to put forward good policies to recruit voters and build a bigger base within the centre.
Alistair, just turning to you, I mean, the next general election, as the current polling stands, Reform would get 13 seats, the Conservatives would get 3, down from 6, the Liberal Democrats would get 1, and the Labour would hang on to Canterbury, where Rosie Duffield, who's not even Labour anymore, would be. So what on earth do you do to try and reverse the current trend?
We're seeing green shoots. Naturally, we were dealt a very bad hand.
Yeah.
And good things are starting to happen. The NHS waiting list is starting to drop. Inflation will be coming down. Interest rates are coming down. After Liz Truss's disastrous budget, my mortgage doubled. So we are seeing good things starting to happen, green shoots. And polling now, a week is a very long time in politics. So we're talking years. Mm. And things will start to change around for the better.
Should you lose Gorton and Denton? Should you have a bad May? Is Sir Keir likely to be in danger of?
I think we've got 404 MPs. We've got a massive majority. Mm. It's all about doing well for the country, and that's what's starting to happen. So if you lose elections now because of polling and their by-elections, it is a concern. But the general election's in quite a few years' time. So green shoots and things will start to get better, and there won't be that bad performance at the general.
Lockhart?
Yeah, I think that what we've seen is there's a huge amount of disillusionment, and the days of the two-party politics are well and truly dead. I think now you've got a situation where certainly on the left and in the centre, many people have completely lost faith in Labour. They think I've got a lot of time for Labour councillors, but in terms of the national picture, I think that they've completely lost their way and their identity. And I think polling for the Green Party demonstrates that we're a serious force. We've got pragmatic policies, and I think we're seeing things changing on a remarkable basis.
The only thing that Mark said could have been correct then is that it's going to be focused on the person. So the candidate. So if you're looking at what political party the candidates have, you look if they're local, they're looking to do a really good job. That's the point, and that's who people are going to start voting for. But then if you're looking at reform, if you mentioned the polls and they're up in the polls, and but now they're sliding down, look at their candidates. Look at the people that they're picking. The wheels will start to come off. And Farage said today about the Scottish candidate, and there's going to be an investigation, and they need to look at the vetting system. He's been let down. Well, what vetting system is there going to be? Would he even pass their vetting system? Is he going to be voted in as leader? Because they haven't even been voting. He just put himself ahead as the leader. So what would happen with Farage if they voted for him to be the leader? A lot of things can happen between now and the general election.
Sorry, Anthony.
One of the things I'd like to see the government do would be to look at repairing loopholes in some of the rules that govern our elections, because what reform have done is test those rules and find loopholes that no one had ever used before. So one of the things reform are doing is receiving donations in cryptocurrency. There's a report from Joseph Rowntree that that's incredibly dangerous, because actually it's very difficult to audit and trace the provenance of those donations. And my view is
and its value can fluctuate quite massively.
Exactly. So one thing the government should do is say the donations to a political party have to be in pounds or a recognised currency. One of the other things they did at local elections was reform bombarded Kent with, we think, about £1.2 million of direct mail. That's never been done before. Local elections are usually contested by local leaflets and canvassing, and you have an expenses limit in Kent County Council. It's about 5,000, I think, is the max a candidate can spend. But they completely bypassed those rules because the letters didn't mention the local candidate, didn't mention the town or village. They could say it didn't count towards that limit. That's completely outrageous. And I would really like to see the government amend the election legislation to make sure you can't do that.
Yeah, I entirely agree with these two points. Regarding the funding, to see that level of pre-election period literature coming through, and that they were very explicit that they were going to cut council tax in all that literature. And then I agree regarding the local provenance of candidates. That's the thing about the Green Party. The Green Party is active in their communities. You see them out and about, and they're familiar faces. Certainly in the communities that I'm aware of that we're operating in, and that engenders a lot of faith in the people who are going to be representing you, because you know they haven't just been parachuted in. At the last election, at the county council election, the vast majority of the people who voted for reform candidates, they'd never heard of them. They hadn't an idea. When we were all on the doorstep, if you spoke to a reform voter, they said, "I'm voting for Nigel." Nigel's not standing.
But do you really think that many people in, this is no slight to any of you personally, but people, turnout in local elections is very low. And there's a lot of research which says even at parliamentary level, anything you could even pretend you could call a personal vote doesn't exist. People vote for parties, not for candidates. Do you really think any of you, for example, could go survey people in your wards and that you would get any particular brand recognition? I don't think anyone except Nigel Farage could really credibly claim that.
If you come to Tunbridge, Our candidate in the general election, Anna Cope, was extremely well known and well liked. If you come to Tunbridge, I've got quite a reasonably high profile in my town. People, if you put in the hours and you do your best, and people know you're genuine, they'll vote for you. Sometimes irrespective of who you represent as a political party, if you're genuine and they know that's the case.
The point is about doing the job and getting things done. So if you get pedestrian crossings, if you get 20 MPH zones, if you're able to help all these people through casework, people remember that. There's residents associations, there's parishes. They know if you've been around. And I'm hearing there's a lot of reform councillors who are AWOL, that don't answer emails. But Mark made a very good point on top of Anthony's, of the direct mail. Within that direct mail, he was very clear. It said, "We will cut your council tax." Now they've just put it up. This budget that's going to be coming forward is very risky. The head of finance publicly said this is a very risky budget. There's £36.6 million worth of debt coming into the final year. They're using capital receipts to pay for some of that. They're looking for £88 million worth of savings. I won't be surprised if in the budget in 27 comes forward, so they'll probably delay when they're going to publicise the budget at the end of this year. I won't be surprised if they can't put together a budget and they don't get an assurance but from the officer, because they don't have enough reserves to function.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull you up slightly on something else. I don't think any of the leaflets actually said they're going to cut council tax. Some of them said freeze council tax, and they said cut taxes. Now, maybe you've seen one that I haven't seen, but I'm just saying that that's not something
so
that
on,
I have seen.
On the leaflet, it says, we will cut taxes, put your tick in the box for this candidate for the KCC election.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So that
if
we can go
there's
on
only
semantics,
one tax that the
there's only one tax.
Yeah. So it was a pretty clear implication of what
okay. I just wanted to
but
make
are,
sure that
there are councillors who are standing up in County Hall at KCC saying we didn't campaign on that. It's like you don't have to. If leaflets from Reform are going through the door saying you're going to be doing that,
yeah.
And the very first opportunity you do exact opposite, you put council tax up, you can't run away
from
that.
It's a broken promise, and I'm finding that's really cut through. I mean, I'm recognised, like Mark is recognised in Tom Ridge. If I walk around Faversham, people stop me in the street to talk about issues, and it's definitely cut through to people, both people who voted Reform and people who didn't have noticed that there's this broken promise. That's certainly how it's being felt by the public.
But on top of that, there are a lot of lines in this budget which it looks like they're going to make, one example, £1 million worth of income from car parks, so they're going to get staff to pay £4 a day. They're going to review that and look at the investigation, but that probably won't happen. There'll be £1 million
it didn't say
gap.
That. It didn't say that in the papers, though. Is that the plan, that they would make staff pay £4
so
a day?
So there's a review in car parks, okay. And there would be an assumption. It says, what could be the risk of this? Staff morale, and it's £4 per day per car park, and that's how it's going to be make up that £1 million.
And just on that point, that word review crops up yeah. so many times in the budget.
So
I mean,
times.
I think Reform are basically people who are allergic to plain English, because throughout the budget it says we'll make a saving by reviewing this thing, we'll review that thing, we'll review that. What does that mean? And I think what it means is they're going to cut things, but they don't want to put in the budget, we're going to cut services. But over the course of this year, they're either going to fail to deliver those savings, or we're going to see what review actually means. But the obfuscation is just really shocking to me.
Yeah, it's true. They're talking about the review lines. They talk about cutting the numbers of officers, the number of our staff. Well, we've already got an organisation which is running extremely hot because it's understaffed. You've got lots of officers doing far more work than they should be doing. The idea that we can do this with a notably reduced number of people is just... and punishing them for coming in, driving into work when the administration has been compelling them to come into work rather than working from home.
Okay. Reform aren't here to sort of like put their case, but I mean, I think.
And we're not even talking about agile social care. That could be a completely different podcast.
I think somewhere else Reform aren't there to put their case is the leader of the council failed to turn up to the Policy and Resources Committee that discussed budget. She failed to turn up to the Scrutiny Committee that discussed the budget. The leader of the council, Roger Gough, Paul Carter in the past, would always do that. So they're choosing to not even make their own case in the council chamber.
Yeah. They probably, in fairness to them, they probably don't know the precedent, but there you go. Listen, let's just talk about first past the post. I know that the Liberal Democrats and possibly the Green Party as well have been quite in favour of reforming our electoral system. Do you think it's now that we're really approaching a five-party sort of race that we really need to have a first past the post, Anthony?
We definitely need proportional representation. And England is actually the only part of the UK that doesn't have it, well, Westminster elections, because you know, the Scottish, Welsh, Northern Ireland assemblies have PR. Local elections now in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland have proportional representation. We used to have proportional representation for European elections. And the first past the post system made sense when there was a two-party system. But now you've got, it didn't make sense when you had three, let alone five, because you're now seeing under first past the post candidates getting elected with only 28, 30% of the vote and twice as many people voting against them. Much better to have proportional representation where the number of seats a party gets is in proportion to the number of votes it gets. It also means there's no wasted votes. Every vote makes a difference to the final result.
Obviously, when the Lib Dems were last in national government in 2010 to 15, there was a referendum on single transferable vote, which is not really a form of PR, and it was kind of
it's an alternative vote.
STV is PR. AV is not, and it was kind of the Tories giving it as a sop to their coalition partners, basically.
Yes.
Got famously very low turnout. Yes. But I want to ask Alistair, the Labour Party membership has consistently voted at its conference for proportional representation, but it's never been party policy. What do you think of it?
If we had PV for the KCC elections, would be the official opposition.
I mean for Parliament in particular.
But we would be the official opposition. But I don't change my tune because that would serve us well. We have a voting system at the moment, So you run your rules by that. When you look at American elections and who gets in, who doesn't, you have the rules, that's the game, you play it, and that's the outcome.
But you don't think, for example, that it would be fairer, more representative, beneficial to the Labour Party or otherwise, for the National Parliament to be elected on a proportional system? Because as it stands at the moment, the Labour Party got a very low proportion of overall votes. If you go by the number of people who would be eligible to vote but weren't even registered, according to research by the Institute of Public Policy Research, the Labour Party got the votes of less than 1 in 5 British adults. Surely that's pretty clearly not fair in any conventional electoral sense, that they therefore have a massive majority.
I understand those arguments. I see them. But this is what we have at the moment. And you have to have your elections and you have your strategies running to that. If we had a different voting system, there would be different strategies and there we would probably have the same outcome because we'd do it in a different way. But I'm open to listening to all arguments on this. And I think the people who should say have the final say in the end are the people of England, because we need more people to come out to vote.
I think there's several issues here. I think the adopting a single transferable vote is definitely the way forward. The difference between the Labour Party and the Green Party is our conference actually sets the policy. So what we agree at our conference actually...
And the Greens have pretty much always been in
favour. And we've always been in favour of it. So the disengagement that we've got with the electors is a real challenge. If we're going to make sure that everybody is aware that they will have a say in the direction of the country, the county, or their unitary council, if that's where we're going, it has to be effective. And I think that system will be effective. If we're going to have a coming elections where first past the post allows parties to take control, well, candidates to take control with 21% of the vote or whatever, what does that really say about our system? And then all other parties can be shut out. Kent County Council at the moment is a great example of how the system's failing. And it has to change.
If I remember rightly, I think in the last general election, Reform UK had in its manifesto electoral reform. Mm. Obviously, it's looking quite far ahead. But if they're either win or the kingmakers in the next general election, do any of you think that they would actually implement electoral reform? Or you think they would keep first past the post because it's more beneficial for them, basically?
I mean, what they say and what they do are two completely different things.
They'll probably do whatever their sponsors, their biggest sponsors, will pay them to do.
Fossil fuel, isn't it?
Let's get it right. Seems to be.
Look, finally, I'm just going to move into one final area that is going to play a part, I'm sure, in all elections, be they local or national, and it's tactical voting. Now, this is something you and I have spoken about, Anthony, on a few occasions. You're going to need tactical voting to win seats. And I dare say, Mark Hood, your party's going to need a bit of tactical voting in order to win some seats as well, whereas the main sort of beneficiaries will be these two parties at the expense of the Labour Party, Alistair. I mean, how do you counter tactical voting when you're a party that's under a lot of pressure?
Have brilliant candidates.
Yeah?
Yeah. Simple track record. Great candidates who are genuine, authentic, and to people that get things done.
Yeah. Mark, just how do you think tactical voting will work as far as the Green Party is concerned? You've got a young, vibrant, seemingly very popular, especially with the young leader in Zach Polanski. And so why do you think people would vote tactically? Would it be an anti-reform vote, or would it be something else?
I think people will look very carefully at their local circumstances. They'll look at the polling. You get all the tactical voting websites, and quite often the recommendations that they give out are just completely misleading. And I think you need to look at your local candidate, which party is actually active. In my constituency in Tunbridge, the Labour Party came second. Labour Party don't have a single councillor in that constituency, not a single one. The candidate arrived at the last moment, visited the constituency twice, only then for hustings. And people have got to look at their neighbourhoods and see who's actually advocating for them. If you've got people who have got no connection, they've got no almost provenance, they've got no record of achievement, advocacy, and they've just been parachuted in, why would you vote? Yes, certainly there's a lot of people lend their votes to other parties, but it should be about policies and commitment. That's what politics is about.
But I mean, I think the point maybe I was trying to drive at is that there's going to be a lot of tactical voting, and this is perhaps the narrative that needs to go a bit in order to keep reform out of certain seats, because that was something that worked to some effect in dealing with UKIP in the past, for example, where, you know, I remember when I think Farage stood down in Thanet South, and basically the it was everybody but Farage,
yes,
just to try and keep him out. So they voted for the Conservative, whoever it was, or it might have been the Liberal Party candidate. But, you know, there is that element to it. And how much are you going to depend on that, Anthony, to...
It's always been a big factor, as you rightly say. And I mean, in my area and a lot of places in Kent, we have traditionally said, round here it's a two-horse race between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives, and people who might have been attracted to other parties have lent us their support to make sure the Lib Dems beat the Conservatives. Now it will be the Lib Dems versus Reform. Certainly in my area they would be the main challenges, and actually we find more people are willing to lend us their support. But you have to give people evidence of that. You can't just say it. You have to campaign all year round and be a visible community champion for people to believe it's a two-horse race between you and somebody else. But I think there are a lot of people who find Reform's politics abhorrent, and you're right that they will be even more motivated than before to support the other candidate who's best placed to win. And I had, in May 2025, I had former Conservative councillors telling me they were going to vote for me because they thought it was between me and the Reform candidate who they thought was a terrible option.
Okay, let's look at Sevenoaks. You've got a Conservative MP, Laura Trott, but Reform are on paper, and according to the pollsters anyway, they're going to take that seat. It might be a squeeze, but they look as if they might take it. Yet it's the Liberal Democrats that came second.
Yes.
So you would need tactical voting. You would almost need some of the Conservative vote or others to kind of back you in order to keep Reform out. I mean, that's one example in Kent that I can think of.
And that's what we're finding in places like Sevenoaks and other parts of Kent, that some people who previously voted Conservative are going to Reform, but some people who previously voted Conservative are coming to Liberal Democrats.
Are we talking about the general election in 2029?
Yeah.
So if you look at when...
I'm talking about pollsters that are polling today, and yes, it has the caveat, we're 3.5 years,
so
I get that.
So if you look at what happened in Thanet when there was UKIP, they had so much infighting, they imploded. So you've got Reform doing the same thing in KCC. When have I got news for you? Has a punchline for Kent County Chaos County Council. I mean, seriously. So the polling will be markedly different in 2029. I will be surprised if they haven't failed Kent County Council between and whatever unitary or like Kent County Council will really struggle with Reform's budget. They might not be able to get a budget. So you look at what they are actually doing and what they're actually saying. And that's why I say you have to look at their actions. So you'll have candidates, they'll put stuff on leaflets, but you just point your finger at KCC where it's gone bust, or you point a picture of this other council that's gone bust, and they'll go, you're going to run a mile from that. They can't run a council. Well, how can they run the country?
Yeah, okay, I think we're straying a little away from tactical voting. But Mark,
if you look at Sevenoaks, you've got Sevenoaks Town is a yellow island in the Sea of Teal. All of the council, all the divisions around Sevenoaks were taken by Reform. Mm-hmm. And I think between here now and the next elections, people will be judging Reform on their record. They'll be asking, where are those councillors? What is the level of representation they've had? Are they visible at County Hall? I could count on my fingers and my hands how many times I've seen those councillors at County Hall on committees or speaking. Basically, they're absentee.
So that's
and
why.
Where's the representation that the people, the Reform voters, are getting from their members? It's an interesting example, Sevenoaks, because it's. I think that's probably worse than most.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see actually, because we've got obviously those councils which have been taken on by Reform, obviously not going to be voting this May, but it'll be interesting to see whether that sort of slight dip in national form and all the factors that you've been articulating today will actually prove to have any sort of effect on the vote that they get, because obviously the momentum doesn't appear to be shifting, because although the Reform vote may have slipped a number of percentage points, the lead hasn't. It's just that the left seems to be fragmenting. I mean, these are polls, and they only represent as a snapshot today. So, sorry, Alistair.
That's why I started when you asked me the initial question, what are you going to do? It's about the candidate. Mm. It's about authenticity. It's about showing that you can get the job done. And I very much doubt Reform can do that.
The places that have local elections in May 26 are mostly places that didn't have local elections in 25. I think it's possible Reform will, on the face of it, continue to do well in May 26. But by the time we get to May 27, there will be local elections in places like Kent that have had Reform councillors
for a couple of years.
Mm. And they'll have a record. And actually, people will start to think, am I really impressed with these guys? And I think the answer would be no.
Yeah. And it's less about Reform the further you go along.
Yeah.
By then, now we're seeing, like I said, government green shoots. We're starting to do things, and what we're implementing, the free breakfast clubs, the extra police in Kent, waiting lists dropping, and more money in people's pockets, £150 off energy bills. All of those things will have fruition and have an effect. So you'll have Reform, who haven't done very well in council. You'll have a government where green shoots and good things are happening, and you'll have a really good candidate to vote for.
Final word.
Yeah, you've also got the factor that when people voted for Reform historically, they voted for something that was different. Well, they're not getting something that's different, are they? Because just look at the level of defections. It's going to be a conform offer. It's just a continuation of the party that failed for 14 years throughout austerity. Why would anybody vote for that?
Anthony Hook from the Liberal Democrats, the Green Party's Mark Hood, and Labour's Alistair Brady. Thank you very much indeed for your time today. Dan, that was a pretty interesting three-way discussion we had with Anthony Hook, Mark Hood and Alistair Brady from the Liberal Democrats, Green Party and Labour Party respectively. What did you take away from that?
I found it interesting. I suppose the main thing regular listeners may not be surprised to hear me say this, it does in fact confirm my priors. I mentioned this, I think, in our last podcast last year, but I was interested to see the extent to which the three parties of the centre/centre-left, Labour, Liberal Democrats and Greens, perceive themselves to essentially be in unity against Reform. The extent to which Reform at both County Hill and the national level really quite gets under their skin in a way that the Conservatives never did. I mean, even Alistair Brady said, with the Conservatives we used to be able to disagree agreeably, and then now we can't. With Reform, the atmosphere is much more hostile, much more febrile. That's not to say that's omnidirectional and that's all the fault of anyone in particular. But I was interested that they seem to openly say that, and it kind of confirms what I thought.
A couple of backbenchers said to me, certainly in the last few weeks, that one said, I'm just not enjoying this anymore. The whole kind of atmosphere and the way things are conducted has been coarsened. That was the word that was used, coarsened. Well, I suppose if you look at it, there's a new broom that's come in and people don't always like change.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a lot of people at Reform would say their entire purpose is. Their whole point
they're disruptors.
Point is to throw a hand grenade into the sort of cosy consensus of three of the centre, of the Liberal centre-left to centre-right, which has dominated this country for a very long time. And they do it very successfully in that they throw an element of conflict and what political theorists used to call friend-enemy distinction, what politics is really about. They throw that right back to the forefront. It forces everyone involved in politics to decide, you know, who are they for, who are they against? And I think increasingly what they seem to confirm is that the quote-unquote parties of the establishment, which includes but not limited to the Conservatives, Labour, Liberal Democrats, and arguably the Greens, feel themselves to be part of one thing and they recognise Reform to be part of quite another.
Yeah, it's interesting that these three are kind of not quite sure quite how the left is going to prosper, because they're all sitting around sort of somewhere between 14 and 21%. It seems to go up and down almost daily where they sit in that, on that scale. So there must be a lot of nervousness amongst the left, because you'd expect the Lib Dems as the third biggest party to come out and do very, very well. Green parties have got great expectations, but, you know, we've seen before there were great expectations of say UKIP in the past, and it hasn't really happened. And the Labour Party, although Alistair Brady talked on several times about talking about sort of the green shoots of things getting better because of what's happening on the national picture, they are bracing themselves for some terrible results in May, and Lord knows there may not be a prime minister called Sir Keir Starmer by the summertime. So the, do you get that that's a sort of, they're in a difficult position because they don't quite know, I haven't detected yet how they intend to do it. How, what's the narrative and how they're going to communicate it? That's what I'm trying to say.
I think, I mean, this is something I detect on the broader left as well, not just the sort of existing parties. The only people on the broadly conceived left who are extremely optimistic about their chances of victory are essentially some of the, basically the much, much more radical fringe people in your party, groups like the Revolutionary Communist Party have been saying the revolution is just around the corner for upwards of 40 years now. Those kinds of people are still very optimistic because they kind of have to be. The parties which actually compete in the day-to-day cut and thrust of electoral competition, I think you have to be basically pretty high on your own supply at this point to think there's any route as it stands to a single party left-wing majority government at the next general election. I don't think anyone particularly thinks that. And I find it telling that obviously the Liberal Democrats and Greens are very, very full-throated in their support for electoral reform. And to his credit, Anthony Hook, to the point he openly said that in Faversham, he would support electoral reform locally, even though it would disadvantage his party because it would be more fair. But whereas Alistair Brady wouldn't really give a position on electoral reform because I imagine his position is whatever works best for the Labour Party.
Well, absolutely. What they've always prospered from in the past. But if you looked at, I looked at the figures yesterday and essentially there is a situation should the Tories and reform vote, i.e. the vote of the right, and maybe lob in the DUP and a couple of the other Ulster unionists might give them sort of seven extra seats, that might fall well short of the actual majority needed. And there could be conceivably, as we have seen in other countries, an alliance of the Labour Party, the Lib Dems, the Greens, Plaid and the SNP. It's happened before, and you might have one or two possibly from the Alliance Party in Northern Ireland, the SDLP and a couple of minority ones as well. That's almost the way as the polls stand that we're headed at the minute.
Yeah, I think in the long term that would be for any of those parties, it would eventually be quite damaging. Being forced into a coalition so large is always quite unstable. You know, at the extreme end of this, you've got countries like Brazil, which has like 30 parties in the parliament. But even much close to home, countries much more close to us, like in Europe, big multi-party coalitions do not...
It's not stable. Look at Ireland. I mean, the Irish Republic. We're trying to form these coalitions, which always they're all done for convenience. But at least the makeup of the government, if you like, is reflective of the vote.
Yeah, I think especially with state of British parties, with parties whose membership feel quite intense enmity to each other. People in the Liberal Democrats and Labour Party are not historically
friends.
The first part, partly because of first past the post, these parties have a very strong sense of their own independence and thus a reticence to work with other parties. So I could foresee a future, I think you're right, where under first past, unless the Labour Party brings in electoral reform suddenly, which I don't think they're going to, you could get essentially what in the latter days of European politics are called a popular front strategy of an alliance of basically all left and centre forces against a perceived threat of the right. And it's possible that they could cobble together a parliamentary majority through that. But I think it'd be very interesting for us at least, but I think it would be extremely unstable. And I think in the long term, that kind of thing would also bolster, at least rhetorically, the appeal of reform, because they can say, look at Reform UK is such a threat to the establishment that all of them are banding together to oppose us. And that's a real possibility, I think. That's not to say Reform are necessarily right about that, but I think that is an increasing possibility and it'll be a real challenge for everyone involved.
Okay, that's it from Dan and I in this episode of the Kent Politics Podcast in the new format. Nikki will be back with you next week to give you a roundup of what's happening in Kent. And in the meantime, don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. And you can also sign up for our politics briefing newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Until next time, see you then. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.